Charlie Foxtrot, a Stargate podcast. I am Boom.
And I am Cetra.
And today we're going to talk about pain.
So much pain.
What pains you today, Maya? Being awake.
Yeah, mostly lack of sleep for me. So I'm on board with Rush mostly, I suppose.
Rush is not sleeping in this episode.
Yeah. He's
got too much PTSD problems.
Yeah, man. Every time I watch this episode, like, even though if you know what's going on, the beginning is still, like, a gut punch of, like, everything being a mess again.
You mean when she kills Matt?
Well, yeah, when James kills Matt and Ray is acting all shifty and Greer is all angry and Volker's hallucinating locked doors and, like, it's not great for anybody.
No. I thought it was a pretty impressive opening because there was no hint to... I mean, I think you started feeling the hint that something was off when Ray was conspiracizing again. That's not a word. Conspiring again and looking all shifty. But initially with that Matt and Vanessa thing, I don't know. It felt real almost for a second.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
and you're like, fuck.
Especially because they gave us this intro that, like, I'm always interested what they remind you of going into it.
Yeah, it's really weird previously. Like, this is all things we haven't thought about in a long time.
Yeah, I mean, they showed us Chloe's dad, and they reminded us of this James and Vanessa thing. And it's, you know, the sex felt very, like, real and violent, and her reaction felt like finally standing up for herself. And you know, in addition to everything else, before she smashes a lamp against his head, just being like, oh my God, why is Matt doing this again? Why did she let this, you know, happen?
I mean, it does, all this whole scene, how short, no matter how short it is, it has so much depth to it, but also has a lot of questions for me. Like, why? I mean, obviously, the hallucination is why she engaged in that again. But, like, why does she see Scott in this way? Was he that way? Why is she talking about him kicking her to the curb? Like, it must have been a much more substantial relationship.
Well, yeah, and this Scott, like, she says that, right? Like, which is at least an opening of a conversation. Like, I'm not letting you do this again. You know, and his response is, whatever.
Her perception, because I really do believe the hallucinations, for the most part, is how each of these characters perceive other characters. Obviously, Greer has to keep a rational hold on his feelings about Rush and Ray, but he definitely thinks that they aren't to be trusted. You know, Matt thinks that his kid blames him for leaving him. And Chloe thinks that her dad would say all the things he said to her. So Vanessa really must see Matt this way.
Yeah.
And kudos to her to being professional and civil this entire season, you know, being friends with Chloe, because unfortunately a lot of writers think, oh, women who want the same man automatically hate each other.
Yeah.
And she's not that way. And then she's been civil with Scott. Like, you never see a hint of her liking Scott to Scott. She's only to TJ.
Yep. She's been civil, and she's obeyed orders when she needs to, and all of
she
that.
She didn't question him. I do wish that she fought back a little bit better. I feel like she has training. She should have took him on a little bit better than that.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, so she kills him. Then Volker.
Yeah, Volker tries to leave his quarters and can't. And, like, calls Riley, who thinks he's insane.
He just calls for anyone walking by the door. Yeah. I think Riley is a bit of a jerk there.
Well, yeah.
I mean, there are any number of reasons could have happened why that door wasn't working. You didn't have to go through and through again.
Yeah. Well, it's odd that they used Riley for that. I think there's plenty of military crew that would have done that a little bit. Like, oh, genius science crew people with your magic powers can't open doors, huh?
Well, I mean, that would mean them actually having to use a crew member.
Yeah.
With a name that isn't the ones that we see normally.
Yeah. And it's odd that it was Riley.
But Riley's been pretty... He's kind of... I would say, condescending with most people.
Okay.
Like, I think he thinks it's funny.
Okay. Maybe that's, you know, maybe I've been misreading him.
Oh, why do you, what do you think?
Oh, I don't know. I just, I remember, I think of Riley as being generally, like, one of the most friendly to the civilians of the military people.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, that's true.
Like, you know, because he gets along with Eli, and he has spent time around the science team doing the documenting and stuff. And
no, you're right, you're right. I was thinking of it more in terms of just, like, I think he would have done it to anybody, being like, ugh.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Like, but anyways, then Greer sees Ray in the gate room. She's shifty as fuck. Eli comes in asking for Matt.
The very subtle level of Ray's shiftiness in Greer's mind. Greer's real good at making people look shifty.
Ray wasn't even in the gate room at that time, right? So it's not... Like, with Ray, it's really weird with Greer. Because sometimes he sees her, but sees a different expression on her face. And other times he just sees her and she's not there.
Yeah.
Which I think is kind of interesting and confusing. Because it's hard to tell what's real and what's not. And maybe Greer is our lens into that sort of inability to tell reality apart due to the tic's toxin.
Yeah. Well, then in the mess, you kind of, that's when you start getting the clue that, like, because overall, if you were just watching this show, maybe you missed an episode or two, maybe you've been watching it week to week. This is like, holy shit, what the hell?
Right. Because, like, she's not given any indication of this.
Did Matt's actor just get written out of the show? We've never seen anything like this where they've completely rolled something back, I guess, except for time.
Right. Yeah, they did kill everybody, didn't they?
Yeah.
Twice.
where we got to, like, not know until a big chunk of the way in.
It was actually the same thing with Lost. We didn't know if those three just got left on the planet. Like, maybe we'll see them another season, but...
Yeah, but that, at least, we knew all of that was happening.
Right. Like, this was out of nowhere.
Yeah, this is crazy.
But then we actually see Matt alive, so then we know something's up, because he talks to Volker.
Yeah.
Because Volker is struggling with his claustrophobia, and if that's true about him, boy, he must be really suffering on that ship, and we didn't know until now.
Yeah. And that's, you know, it's just a reminder that, like, I tend to say a lot in my life and try to remind people, like, you're not the main character of the world.
Right.
Like, because it's really, it's impossible to remember that as you're living your life.
Right.
And, you know, it's easy when you're watching a TV show, especially, to forget that.
Right.
To be like, oh yeah, you know, well, Volker does astrophysics and he's over here. And, like, of course he's a whole person with his own issues and paranoias and whatever.
Honestly, though, I don't think these hallucinations are about claustrophobia, because a lot of them aren't that claustrophobic. I think it's his fear of being trapped on the ship for the rest of his life.
Well, yeah.
And then it starts manifesting in the claustrophobia when he gets, like, stuck in a coffin almost.
Yeah. Well, I don't remember. Did Volker get a Kino message in Darkness and Light when they thought they were flying into the sun?
Yeah, he was talking about how Rush...
Oh, his was just about how Rush is not Bach or whatever.
I think it was Puccini.
Yeah.
Or no, he was talking about how, like, you know, Salieri is still a good opera writer, even if he didn't become Puccini or something like that. So, yeah. I don't know if that message really relates to...
Well, yeah, so I wanted to make sure, because the only... Among the whole science team, the messages that we've heard were Park being like, you know, being optimistic about life on another planet, and Brody saying, I knew I would die in space, and being kind of at peace with that.
Right.
So I think it's easy to kind of assume that the science team is all okay with that.
Right. But Volker's not.
Whereas we know people like James and TJ are really not.
Ah, James.
Poor James.
He's breaking my heart this episode.
But it's interesting to know that, like, Volker's fears are about being trapped. Volker is not so okay with just right. being on this ship.
Maybe that's why, of all the science team members, he tends to go down to the planet the most, other than Rush. Like, you don't see Brody on planet very often.
Yeah.
Especially since Time, when he probably watched himself die, and he was like, no thank you.
Yep, not that anymore.
I mean, Park does go down from time to time as well, but I swear I see Volker on most missions.
Yeah, I think that's very true.
Well, hopefully we're not wrong on that point.
I'm sure we'll be told, but I have a lot of visuals of Volker's curly blonde hair, planet
yeah.
side.
And... yeah, like, you know, different kinds of trees around him, yeah. yeah. And he's less sweaty and pained when he's outside than he is inside. He always looks just gross and greasy when he's in the ship. Sorry, Patrick Gilmore, that's not true. You're a beautiful man.
Well, it's probably it's to do with the claustrophobia, because the showers are pretty weird on this ship.
Right.
Maybe he tries to avoid, you know, having to bathe as often until he can get to a planet and dunk in a lake.
Could be. Well, in any case, Matt chases his kid, and he will do so for a while.
Yep.
I mean, we could probably just knock his thing out real quick. Chases child. Child asks, why did you leave me? And then he goes on to the rest of the plot.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, and that's the first 100%, I mean, besides seeing Matt alive.
Right.
And wondering, wow, is Time screwed up or something?
Right. This is how you know that this are hallucinations.
Yeah, this is definitely not a thing that can be really happening.
Right.
And that means that at least two people are affected separately.
My thing with Matt and Matthew, number one, it must be weird to call out your own name.
Yeah. But actually, I guess guys have been used to it for generations, right?
There are a shit ton of Matthews, that's true.
Well, and men have historically handed down their kids' names a lot.
That's true. But I think it's interesting that he thinks... I mean, he's guilty over his kid, obviously. But I wonder if he knows why he feels guilty about it. Like, I wonder if he's had the reflection to figure out exactly why he feels that.
Yeah.
Because it didn't seem clear that he understood it on Earth.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he's Matt, and he's so straightforward.
Right. I mean, it could be echoing his own feelings as a little boy, like, because he lost his parents quite young.
Yeah, I mean, that would definitely be a part of it. I don't think he would have chosen to leave had he known she was keeping the kid.
Right.
And I want to believe that, but we know that he chose to leave and never check in on her.
Right. So... that's what I was wondering. I was like, I wonder if he's feeling guilty because now he's realized, like, yeah, it's not his fault that she didn't tell him about the kid. And everything like that. But there is some element of complicity when you chose not to check up on somebody.
Yeah, I mean, after. When you chose to go on with your life and you didn't, you know, follow up.
Right. Like, you didn't even take her to her abortion, dude. Come on, man. But, anyways.
Oh, poor thing. Anyway.
Poor thing. So Matt's done for hallucinations.
Yeah, and he does... there's this weird moment with him and Chloe in the corridor, too.
Mm-hmm.
That nothing much happens, except for then we hear Park call for as many people from the military as possible.
Oh, right, because Dunning has...
yeah, because Dunning is ripping himself apart.
Well, I mean, what did Chloe say? Did it have any meaning? I can't remember.
No, she just walked by, she bumped into Matt, and then he was like, did you see anybody run by you? And she says no to give us another indication in case we didn't know.
Okay, yeah.
That Matt is actually hallucinating.
Well, in any case, at some point, Greer reported to Young that Ray and Rush are conspiring again. And, oh my god, kudos to Young. Like, I'm sure he believes they're conspiring again. But he does the right politic thing of approaching them.
Well, yeah, and telling Greer to stand down, which is... nice.
Yeah, much later. Yeah.
Yeah, they actually have a conversation, and Ray is like, yeah, you know Greer hates us and has always hated us this whole time, right?
Right. And Young, in a moment of Unclarity says, nope, just since the mutiny. And I'm just like, what? Are you serious? Like, Greer has hated Rey since they got on the ship because she put him in jail.
Yeah, but that's such a young thing to do. Right. Where someone's like, slightly snarky, bitter thing. And he's like, still bitter about other stuff that's actually your fault.
Right. That's probably why Emily divorced him, is because he was, like, keeping a list of shit. Instead of, like, talking about the actual issue, he's like, well, you didn't do the dishes on Sunday.
Yeah. What about like, those 5 times you didn't have dinner ready when I said I'd be home and I was home? Why should I even come home if you're not going to have dinner? You know, whatever.
Yeah, like, so if I'm not going to come home, of course I'm going to fuck TJ.
Oh, my God.
How dare you, Emily.
Thank God they didn't have kids. I would have been those kids anyway.
Aw, I'm sorry. But, like, yeah, and then also Rush, like, ever since they were on planet, Greer put a gun to Rush's head immediately in the first episode. How is Young so blind?
Because Young trusts Greer. Young trusted him even when he was in solitary confinement on Icarus. Like,
yeah. That's messed up. It's so messed up. Yeah. Anyways, Park calls Matt, and that's why.
Yeah.
He has to go out. Dunning has snakes in his arms.
Yeah.
And poor Park is just covered in blood.
Yeah, like she obviously was trying to help.
Probably getting him to stop. Yay, Park.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember. Is Dunning the person she slept with in Earth?
Ooh.
Which episode was she like, oh, you know.
Yeah, she was sleeping with a guy, and then she was like, haha, okay, bye.
Right.
It might be. He was dark-haired, and Dunning is dark-haired. I would have to go back and double-check.
Yeah, it was with Aemon Dunning.
Nice. Okay. So that's...
That's why they give her that weird look later on.
Yeah.
Or she gives a weird look.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, that's kind of her to go and be helping this dude still, and, you know, obviously she only gave him a cold shoulder for a little while. She's not, like, completely...
She didn't really... I mean, I think a guy would interpret it as a cold shoulder. She was just more like, you know, I got the thing. We didn't discuss more than this thing.
Yeah. That's
so...
Probably true.
This is actually the kindest way to let you know.
Yeah. that what just happened is all that's happening.
Right, because if she had, like, sat him down and explained it, he would have been like, oh, it's so nice of her to sit me down and explain it. There's hope.
Yeah, no.
Right?
Nope, nope, nope.
But yeah, so poor Dunning. Oh, yeah, you know, I just realized Young has had a hell of a morning, because wasn't he just trying to, he finds James in her quarters, right?
Yeah.
Just before this, and she's like, you know, in her underwear and crying, thinking there's a dead body on the floor.
Yeah.
And then he goes to Greer being like, they're conspiring against you. And then he has to go to the infirmary because Dunning has, like, snakes in his arms.
Yeah, his whole crew is freaking cracking up, man.
Right? And he has no reason to think that it's anything outside.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure to Young it just feels like another... freaking day of this, right? Like, okay.
Yeah.
You need to tell James that everything's okay and give her a day off, and that probably means I'm working a double shift, and...
Well, I mean, yeah, because when someone told him about James not showing up, he was like, ugh, again? And I'm like, oh, I wish he would just realize, like, all you need to do is just be nice to her once. Just validate her and she will be better.
Yeah.
That's all she needs. But he's not going to notice that.
Yeah, that's not his...
style.
Style for people that aren't Matt.
Nope.
And Chloe and Eli. So, Riley has a good note in the mess that, like, it's surprised more people aren't going a little nuts.
Right.
Out here trapped in space.
He also is like, he thinks Greer would be the first to snap. And you're like, ha ha ha. That's the problem with Greer, is that when he snaps, you don't fucking know it until it's too late.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
He's cold and calculating even when he's got a mental breakdown. So, shit.
Yeah.
And I just like how Eli has, like, his expression goes through, like, 4 different expressions. Like, he just does not know how to say or react to that. He doesn't want to die. He doesn't want to disagree. But he doesn't want to agree.
Yeah.
Anyways.
We then, is this our first bit of Rush?
Yeah, Rush feels a presence. We don't know if it's his hallucination or if Greer is actually stalking him, though.
Yeah.
And then Brody kind of comes out, notices something is up, asks what's up, and Rush is like, everything's fine. And Brody does not look convinced.
I do like that as a reminder that we're on this intergalactic jump, like, everything is much darker than it has been.
Mm-hmm.
We're obviously in kind of power-saving mode, which is cool.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah, and that's also, you know, if this is, like, a week in or whatever, it's not surprising that people that, especially people from the gate teams that have been used to getting out a little bit,
right.
Are
starting
going
to suffer
a little,
from
or would be going stir crazy. Obviously, there's outside influence here.
Right, right. No, I mean, I think it's totally understandable. So, I think the only thing else that happens is Volker is trapped in his bed and he's screaming his head off. And he must have been screaming his head off for a long time because they don't get him until after they're all discussing the tick in the infirmary.
Yeah.
Oh,
poor thing.
Yeah, I know, right? Anyways, James sees Matt and is just utterly flummoxed.
Yeah.
She does not know how to handle these emotions. Because even if it was hallucination, those feelings must be real.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, because she was in her quarters this, you know, the whole time, just mm-hmm. staring at this body, not knowing
right.
what to do.
Right. I mean, I don't think we really understand the horror. I mean, I think the audience understands it because what's interesting to me, especially later on, a lot of the scenes, like, revolve around the other characters, but James is always in frame, and it's almost like a metaphor for how this is, like, no one is focusing on James, you know
yeah.
what I mean? Like, she's the one who's reliving a lot of these things, like, when Matt faints because of the toxin, she relives it. She keeps looking at him and seeing that bloodied face, and I think Young
yeah.
doesn't realize how much pain and insecurity she really keeps held in. Like,
yeah.
she should be given an award for all of that. But no one pays attention to James. Even
yep.
when she's in frame, she's not being paid attention to.
Yep, she's just there.
Yeah.
Doing whatever she's doing.
Same thing for the audience in the show. Like, this is probably the only episode where James really gets much.
Which sucks.
But anyways. So they find out they all had tics except Barnes, who got lucky. And I believe this is our first introduction to Barnes.
Yeah, I think she's been in the background, but this may be the first time we got a name.
Right. Hey, she might marry Eli someday because of Descendants.
Oh, yeah. No, Barnes is cool. It's nice to have more named military personnel. It's nice to have another female character.
According to this, she was on Air Part 1, and we don't see her again until Pain.
Wow. Okay.
So anyways, TJ, it's really interesting to me that they strap down a guy who's having claustrophobic nightmares. So they're strapping down Volker and he's like screaming, but he wants out. He really wants out. And she's just like, okay. And then she sedates him.
Yeah. I mean, I think because the first person to get brought in was Dunning, who did grievous physical harm to himself.
Right.
You know, this is protecting, like, they're
right.
trying to be protective.
Yeah, I know, I understand. I just think it's
but
really
yeah, I understand it is kind of unfortunate.
Well, in any case, she tries to take the tick off of Matt, and as I said, James like looks at him like he's dead.
Yeah, because clearly the ticks do something awful to you when you try to remove them.
Oh, that's what I wrote in my notes. It says, the camera angles on James show how much all of this is affecting her, but no one is paying attention to that.
Yeah. Do we know for sure that James told Young what she saw?
Because she says, you're alive, and Young says, she thinks she killed you.
Oh.
Which is a hell of a fact to have on your mind, but it feels like Matt just doesn't pay attention to that because he's got his own problems.
Yeah, well, and maybe Young doesn't pay much attention to that too because, you know, Young's is just more frickin' space crazy going around.
Right. He just doesn't care. So next we have Greer spying with a mirror. And then Chloe sees her dad in a shuttle.
Yeah. After she had this conversation with Young that was like, what if the hallucinations don't stop? What if, you know, they keep getting worse? What do we keep doing? And then she's just totally chill being like...
No, she's not. Initially, she's like, get the fuck out. Like, I don't want this. You're not real. To me, it's like in her mind, she wants to see him so bad that she knows...
Yeah,
if she sees him again, it's just going to hurt so much more.
Well, and she knows for sure it can't be true, right? Like,
right.
Matt has had these experiences before where he's seen something that's turned out to be real.
Mm-hmm.
So for him, there was kind of this faith in his kid, but Chloe knows. Chloe's more logical than that. She knows her dad's not coming back.
I like that dynamic, though. I really do. I like the idea of someone knowing it's an hallucination, but it's so real, and it's what they want so badly that they accept it. And they go, okay, this is as close as I can get is this facsimile of my memory. And but she, I mean, in her defense, she does struggle against it at first. She's like, you're not real. This is stupid. Like, just go away. I know you're not real. Why are you still here?
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't
To most of us, if we've, you know, seen something or thought we've seen or heard something, that's how we get rid of it, right? Like, we go, wait, was there a knock at the door? No, there wasn't. Okay, it's not real.
Right.
Like.
Well, anyways, again, Greer finds Ray and Rush talking, probably just about normal things.
Yeah.
But Rush, he causes problems for himself. When he asks Greer for proof, he just sounds suspicious.
Yeah. Remember 6 episodes ago when we were like, Rush, sounding shifty even when he is being completely legitimate.
Right. But on the other hand, we don't know if this is real or not.
Yeah.
Because we have no indication from anyone else to say that this is real.
Yeah, because Greer is out in the darkness, you know, exploring the ship. Nobody yet believes that he's hallucinating.
No.
And... Of course Greer is going to just, you know, trust what he believes.
Right. Of course he is. But the thing is, like, the looks she gives him, like the arrogant smirks and the raised eyebrows and shit, you never see her do that on the show.
Like, oh, no.
She keeps herself pretty tightly wound.
And that's part of why it's wonderful that they had Ming-Na and Bobby Carlyle both on this episode.
Because she's capable of it?
Because they're the ones that could 100% be like, oh, you want me to act the same character, but as though I were evil? Sure.
Well, it's more than that. It's, do you want me to be the character as this other character perceives me?
Yeah.
Yes, I will take that challenge.
That is so cool.
Yeah, no, that's a hard thing to do. For sure. Then Chloe is talking to her dad again. And you realize, like, this was his dream. Like, he always wanted to go into space.
Yeah.
I think it's a bit weird that he's like, you're living my dream. Like, okay. Shouldn't Chloe have her own dreams?
Well, I think a part of why Chloe is so adaptable here is that she had just finished school. She was doing this kind of, you know, filler work, using her degree to help her father's career.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think she had long-term goals yet.
That could be.
She definitely isn't one of those people that was like, well, I was going to be a lawyer, and I had this, and I, you know.
Well, it fits with what he says to her, you know, one step at a time. Which, by the way, is pretty much what Matt says to her after he dies.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe she just takes, that's why she's adaptable. She just takes things one step at a time. Like, maybe she has a very explosive emotional reaction, as she should. She just watched her dad die.
Yeah.
But she just takes it step by step. And I think that makes sense, actually, when she realizes she's a Nakai math genius.
Yeah.
She doesn't really freak out about it. She's just like, okay, this is the new normal.
Yeah. You know, just this keeps changing. This is a new skill I have, and I can be useful now.
What I like about her conversation with her dad, though, the most is it's like her putting words that she's been rationalizing to herself, but not quite believing, into her dad's mouth and having her dad say it to her, even though she knows it's not real. Just having her dad say those words that she's been thinking validates it for her.
Yeah, and that's, if any good comes of this whole episode, like, Chloe getting to talk with her father is definitely a part of it.
Working out those feelings.
Like, working out those feelings and us getting to see, so much of this episode is the audience getting to see conversations that would otherwise be internal to a character.
Yeah.
Right? Like, Chloe has been going through all of this in her mind.
Yeah.
But we now get to see it, you know, and know how much he is still affecting her, obviously, as he should be, and how she's getting along and how much her life is changing.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's cool stuff. We also, you know, some people, we get inside their head and it's like, I really just wish my dad was here to encourage me. Some people, we get inside their head and it's like, I don't trust a single living human in the galaxy.
You know what, though, with Chloe, she seems like such a blah character. But when you actually start picking apart what she is inside her head and what she does, like, she's really not that change with the wind kind of person a lot of fans accuse her of being. Like, she just kind of, you remember, like, you know, she decides to stay on a planet, or she decides to, you know, leave Matt behind or whatever.
I think she's
been pretty consistent, and I think we just malign her, and we don't know why.
Well, and I think Chloe makes decisions more slowly and keeps her options more open than a lot of other people on this ship. We have a lot of people who are, you know, military officers on this ship, and Rush also is a snap judgment decision kind of person.
Yeah, I will stab this person with a screwdriver, being one of them.
And so I think Chloe kind of is more willing to go with the flow and then, you know, make the right decision at the right time.
Yeah. No, I mean, she always does, right? Like, I remember we were annoyed with her in the beginning with Rush and his snap decision, right? And obviously we're annoyed with Rush with how he rationalized it to Chloe, because that was not the time to be rational. But,
well, yeah.
Like, she came to terms with it, and I would dare suggest that she and Rush become very, very close. Like, they talk about their nightmares together.
Yeah.
They end up doing math together. She decides to, like, be a part of his coup. Like,
and I think
she just needed time to get to that place.
In a way, like, we were just, we discussed in Human that, like, the part of Eli that annoys Rush the most is lack of ambition.
Right.
And he doesn't seem annoyed by that in Chloe. He seems to see in Chloe, like, that she's going to go somewhere and do something on her own.
She just needs to figure out what it is.
Yeah, and he's perfectly happy to, you know, have her there. She doesn't freak out except in appropriate circumstances.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, if Rush can respect a person, they've got to be at least partially logical.
Right. I totally agree. So, let's get back to the episode. They decide to try and take the poison that they use as anesthetic to try and get the tick off.
Yeah.
I think it's weird that they want to do it on Matt again, like, after he just got exposed to a massive amount of toxins. Like, shouldn't they try it on a different person? And also, he's, like, their lead military dude.
Yeah, I assume it's, and we didn't see it, but maybe it's a Matt volunteering thing.
Well, no, because he's unconscious until, like, basically right when they're about to do it, and then he comes to.
Oh. I remembered him saying stuff, so I was wrong.
Oh, maybe I'm wrong. I could be wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem sort of weird, but at the same time, it's the easiest to see on Matt.
Because of his hair.
So,
That's true.
They should really go grab Greer, because I'm sure it would be even easier to see on Greer.
Yeah, but they didn't realize.
Short hair.
They thought it was one tick a person, and then they don't find it on Matt. Then they think, oh shit, maybe it's jumped. So they still aren't suspecting Greer yet, because they still think there's a limited amount of ticks.
Yeah.
Right? And this is kind of where Eli runs into Chloe. And he runs into what he knows is the right thing to do, and wanting to have Chloe still be his friend.
Yeah. He has this very sweet moment as he's like, he can only see her in the room.
Right.
And he's watching, you know, and he's like, oh, Chloe's hanging out and talking to someone. And then he doesn't creep for too long. He comes in and is like, hi.
And then sees no one there. And he's like, who are you talking to?
Yeah.
And I mean, I think Eli is right in this instance. Like, I can see her logic of, you know, I just need to hold on to this. Like, I'll get rid of it. I just need to hold on to it a little longer.
Yeah.
And Eli's like, you don't know what it's doing to you. Come on. But he's such a people pleaser that he can't go against her. But when Matt supports him, then he does.
Yeah, and that's...
He's like a group mentality kind of person. That's why he likes Young. Oh my god, I just realized.
Oh yeah.
Young is like the majority opinion.
Yep.
So he tends to go towards the group. Oh my
and
god.
And that's, yeah, and that's why Eli tends to be on Young's side, because yeah. Young is always going to have the military also supporting his opinions.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Anyways, Eli decides not to tell, and then we see Rush wandering around, and he's the one we've had the littlest indication of if he's having hallucinations or not, because yeah, it's other very than... possible Greer was following him.
Yeah. Like, is it paranoid hallucinations when you're, you know, you believe someone's stalking you and they might actually be?
So here's the thing. I don't know. They never talk about taking the tick off of Rush. PTSD can result in hallucinations that you can't control. And I wonder if the paranoia triggered by Greer has made him, like, it triggered his paranoia of the Nakai, because he knew the Nakai were following him because he had the tracker in his chest. So wouldn't that be interesting, while everyone else is having tick-based hallucinations, like, Rush is legit just having a mental breakdown?
I actually believe that. I believe that Rush's stuff is not tick-based. Because we know also that he has not been sleeping enough.
Nope.
Which can also trigger hallucinations and, you know, micro-napping and all that kind of thing.
He also looks really dirty, and we find out that the water from the Nakai ship scares the fuck out of him. He might not even be showering.
That could also be true.
I'm glad you agree. I mean, I can see it be a tick-based, but...
Well, but here's the thing. It's very easy to be like, oh, you know, Chloe got a tick from somebody. Of course Chloe's been in close physical contact with people, especially Matt.
Right.
There's no evidence that Rush has been in close physical contact with anyone that went down to the ship.
Well, Volker, probably.
Yeah, but he's not hugging Volker, or maybe not even patting him on the back.
Right. Initially, I thought maybe one had, like, jumped from Barnes really quickly, but I was like, when would he ever see Barnes?
So, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I'll believe both, but my guess is that Greer triggered something in him, because he's been close to that breakdown many, many times.
Yeah.
And I think it's, like, through force of will that he keeps himself.
Well, he's aware enough of his surroundings that, like, he would notice someone lurking around.
Right.
The ship is much darker than it has been for the previous few weeks.
That's true.
Which means, on some level, everybody, you know, it's that innate human fear of darkness.
Right.
Even if you like the dark, even if you know you're 100% safe, you're gonna, you know, have that momentary twinge of suspicion.
Right. And the Nakai were just on their tail last episode.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it all makes sense. And also, Chloe, who is also traumatically affected by the Nakai dream, she even talks about it. She says, I dream about you, Dad, and how you died. And before, she was talking about how she dreams about being in the Nakai ship. So, like, first of all her dreams suck.
Yeah.
But if she didn't go to the Nakai incident, which was far more recent and painful, then it could suggest that what Rush is going through is not what the tick did.
Yeah.
Not to say her emotions about her father aren't more powerful, but they've had a longer time to rest. And she has barely talked about him in the last 10 episodes.
Well, that's true. I mean, like we said, it's been a long time since the show reminded us that her father was here and died.
Right.
It
doesn't seem to affect any of her decisions. Yeah.
And I think partially, I mean, what we're seeing through the tick here, like, the episode is called Pain, right?
Right.
And while the pain is very real for her, the experience of her hallucinations is overall positive.
Right.
because presumably of how good her relationship with her dad was, and
that could be true.
How much better even losing him is than memories of torture and
everything else. That's a good point. And she has control over it, right? Because she knows it's an hallucination. But you would have think, I mean, if we go along those same lines, you think Rush would have, you know, dreamed of Gloria.
I think you are right about Rush's stuff being a PTSD break.
Right.
He is being left mostly alone because a lot of the crew is in confinement or doing other things.
Right.
And Rush won't stop working.
Well, so... okay. So if it's a tick, though, let's just say it is exacerbated hugely by his PTSD.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's the one that's going the most insane in the fastest amount of time.
Yeah, he's seeing a variety of really different things, which right. are fluctuating in and out. They're all terrifying. They're obviously destabilizing him.
Right. Even having one of those hallucinations would have led to a mental break. So the first hallucination, other than the Greer paranoia thing, is the water.
Yeah.
And that would have, hallucination or no, that would have triggered him.
Well, yeah,
no matter
because
what.
that is his trigger. Like, water and drowning, like, that's what we see him, you know, dreaming of and having nightmares of and all of that.
Well, Chloe has the nightmare about drowning in the...
Yeah. But Chloe's nightmare is less about drowning and more about her mother being there.
That's true. You're right. Okay. Good point. Anyways. Sorry, I think we belabored that. In a good way.
I will throw out my one other weird crackpot theory, which is that we don't know entirely what effect the chair did or didn't have on Rush's mind.
So if there is any link
to any kind of, memory of destiny... Mm-hmm. That might be why he's so clearly seeing Nakai on the ship.
Right.
If there were Nakai on the ship at some point before.
Right. And that's why they don't seem that concerned with who he was. That's a really crackpot theory, but it's kind of interesting.
So, anyway.
Anyways, Ray finds Greer, and he is fucking terrifying. This is after Rush sees the Nakai come through the gate. Jamil Walker-Smith is just amazing. Like, how does he fucking do that? Like, I've seen his stuff and, like him as a person in reality. He's like Luis Ferreira. He's funny and goofy and, like, very lighthearted. But, like, just the way he's sitting and looks at her.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
And the knowledge that that's not a hallucination, right? The knowledge that that's how he's acting.
Right.
Is chilling.
But I also love... Just the way Ray holds herself throughout this episode is really interesting. Real Ray.
Yeah.
You know, especially
which
at
we
the
don't
end.
See a ton of.
Yeah.
We see her with Young. We see her here with Greer.
But I think the most important one is at the very end when she has her arm in a sling after Rush stabbed her. He sees her and she straightens her back visibly.
Yeah.
And walks right past him, like shoulders straight. And I just, that's Ray. To me, that's Ray.
Yeah.
If anything else the show tells me, at least that's Ray to me, is she moves on, you know? And she takes her experiences.
Yeah.
But she doesn't confront Greer. Instead, she just goes, you know what, I'm stronger than this.
Yeah.
And you can't fuck with me.
Yeah. The Ray Greer scene is incredible. And the transition of, like, we get one little shot of what he's seeing her doing, and then we get the rest of the shots of...
Of what she's
how she's actually behaving.
Right. She looks worried and angry and everything.
Yeah. So good. Micro expressions. My favorite acting.
Yeah, me too. But then Rush sees the Nakai and Greer runs after him. And Ray, being a good person, finally action star Ray we get to see.
Yeah.
Other than next season when she basically kills her body host on Earth.
Yeah.
She doesn't think twice about it. She just runs after him.
Yep.
So,
well, she's not going to let Greer freaking stab anybody.
Right.
She can help it, which is awesome.
I mean, like, obviously she's put Greer away before. And also I wonder if she is better friends with Rush, despite that, like, one Mean Girl episode where she tried to, like, become friends with everyone again after the coup and tried to throw Rush under the bus. Like, it seems like she has gone back to I'm friends with Rush again.
I do want to dwell for a second. There's a lot of cuts back and forth here, but
right.
the end of Chloe's story,
right.
they get her to the infirmary. They remove the tick. And she has this moment, because they've been crushing each tick as they remove them.
Right.
And she looks at this little tiny bug in a box before Young...
No, Matt takes his fucking gun out to smash it.
Yeah, looks at it like, that's my dad.
Aww.
Like, for just this moment, and that's when she starts crying.
Well, she was up to that point. Yeah. And that scene, it also says, like, Young is like, no more discussion. Obviously, she had been arguing with them for a while about it.
Yeah. And it would be a very interesting show where they let Chloe keep this otherwise benign tick, and we had her hallucination of her father.
Oh my god. You're giving me such ideas, because I already had this one idea from Stargate Universe. I wanted to write about a crew that had the alternate universe person also there.
Oh.
And like, you know, like just established, not added in an episode and then killed. Just established, like, this is my alternate universe self. And then I would love to have another one who's got like a tick permanently buried in them and they're just constantly talking to their hallucination, even though they know it's a hallucination.
Wow.
I'm going to create the story. I don't know what the story is, but I love these characters so far. That's
super
Stargate.
Interesting.
Right? I wonder what else Stargate is going to make available to me to mine. Maybe I'll have a character that is like the future child of another character in an alternate timeline. Who knows?
Oh, I have so many of those.
Yeah.
not in SGU, but...
So, yes. The scene with Chloe, I think, is really beautiful. And Elise Levesque is an amazing actress, especially when she needs to cry. But I still want to know why Matt had to take a gun out to smash the bug.
That's what they've been using.
No. Young used his finger and, like, smeared it across the...
No, it was, it was also the butt of a gun.
Was it? Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was. Unless his hands were gloved, but I've never seen him wear gloves. Because okay. It was definitely something black.
All right. Well, I guess Matt just doesn't want to touch it.
Yeah.
And then just in that moment, Greer calls Young.
Yeah.
Greer is hearing something very different than what Young is saying.
And that is, this exchange is easily the scariest thing in the entire episode to me.
Right.
Like, someone with Greer's training and skill.
Right.
Hearing, permission granted to kill people.
Right.
When someone is going, no, 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 stand down.
Right. And you know what's funny is that still, even in this instant, they don't think he's hallucinating. Until, like, a couple minutes afterwards when Young is like, what the fuck? Like, because he even says, well, just hold them, right? Like, we'll deal with this later. It's like he almost still believes that they could be conspiring through all this.
Yeah.
And then Eli's like, well, shit, they might be hallucinating.
Yeah. I am glad that this room of people heard Young say, stand down, don't do anything.
Right.
I wish it had been... You know, I wish Ray had heard that, or...
Or Rush.
Rush, or somebody, even Brody, right? Like, somebody who...
Oh, yeah,
is
Brody
in the inner
there.
Circle of the other side.
And Volker is totally dead to the world.
Yeah,
so
Volker's dead
it.
To the world.
I mean, Park is listening to all that stuff as they're radioing and can't find Greer.
Yeah.
So I guess there's that, but I don't think she was there initially when Young says stand down.
Sorry, I'm watching Rush be terrified and hide. And
he's scrappy.
He's bringing a screwdriver to a gunfight, which I'm not sure about.
Well, I mean, like, he ran. He did the thing that made the most sense in where he was. Like, even in the grips of a mental breakdown, he's still a scrappy little fucking calculating guy.
As a fugitive, he's doing fine.
Right.
I guess the other thing that makes me think it's not a tick on Rush...
Yeah.
Is that once he's in this very real situation with Greer, I take it back. No, he's still seeing Nakai instead of Greer.
He only sees the Nakai. That's why he stabs Ray.
Yeah.
Which just sucks. And good job for Ray for never holding that over Rush.
Yeah.
Ever. She holds it totally against Greer.
Well, that's because Greer is a shifty.
But Greer, through this whole scene with where Rush thinks he's the Nakai, though, is so terrifying. Like, we thought he was scary before. He's worse now.
Oh, yeah. He's the person that Ronald Greer could be in a war scenario is terrifying.
Yeah.
Anyway, like, and thank God he's on their side, right?
Right.
Thank God he's not a Lucian Alliance plant who's going to turn like this and hunt down every person on the ship one by one.
Right.
But, oh, man.
But I don't know. At the end of the scene, though, Greer says, "I will not let you take this ship." I wonder, it's a very reminiscent thought to what Rush is experiencing right now. Like, those two are both experiencing the same thing in different ways, in concentric circles, almost.
Yeah. No, they're both...
trying to protect it.
Yeah, trying to protect the ship and the crew.
Yeah.
In their own way.
Right. And Rey just got caught up in the middle of it, poor lady.
And good on her for, you know, trying to be there. She's still, even in the face of this, even in the face of a gun, she tries to argue.
I think she's made her peace with all of it. Like,
with Greer.
I think she realized, like, no, there's nothing I can do to talk my way out of this situation, so I'm going to say what I fucking feel.
Yeah.
And it's that I am hurt and I am dying.
Yeah.
And I mean, Stargate has, like, for its worst enemies, will take them in and take care of them.
Yeah.
If they ask for help, like, come on, man. But anyway, Scott radios, he can't find Greer. The civilians are all lined up to make sure they don't have ticks, right?
Yeah, they're.
And that's when they realize Rush and Rey are unaccounted for.
Yeah.
And Park's listening and looks worried.
Young is still super fixated on TJ and very worried that, like, TJ might be hallucinating good reason. But, like, there's no evidence that TJ is hallucinating, so...
Well, no, it's not even that. It's, like, before... Because this is, like, the second time he mentions, like, you know, you need to take it easy and you need to...
Yeah.
Do other things. Like, he, this whole time, he's like, let someone else deal with it, even though you're the only trained professional on here, because I'm worried about the baby.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? You should just trust TJ. She knows what her body is saying, and she's not gonna do anything that hurts her baby.
Yeah.
And you don't have a fucking say in all of this. Stop being so goddamn young.
Yep. Ugh. Agreed. All that.
He never says it's about the pregnancy, though.
No, but his behavior toward her has shifted dramatically from his expectations of her before.
Yeah, it used to be get it done, TJ, and now it's, oh, do you need to put your feet up?
Yeah.
And you know what? Yes, consideration for a pregnant woman is admirable, but she knows what she's doing.
Yeah.
If she wants to stand up, she's going to stand up, you know? She's going to work on these things. She knows how to take care of herself.
Yep.
The problem with pregnant ladies is when people tell them to do things that they can't or don't want to do. That's when they start hurting. You know?
Anyway. It's such a weird situation for Young to be, like, trying to be considerate and, you know, stop her from overworking herself. I'm like, look, asshole.
Well, he's about to lose his,
if the option is TJ puts her feet up and everyone dies,
right?
Of course she's going to choose keep working.
Exactly.
Like, let it go.
Anyways, so Scott finds them. He can't get through the door, but he does hear Ray's voice inside, and she's, like, screaming for help. And Greer isn't listening to Matt either. So the two people he listens to the most, he can't even hear them anymore. He's so far gone.
Yeah.
And
they have to blow the door open with Semtex.
Yeah.
Which is gonna be fun. And especially since they're right by the door.
Yeah, I wondered that. I think the one part about the scene that I don't quite grasp is, you know, Greer says he's done with her, and she holds up this bloody hand to be like, don't. And the dad in the corner says, do it. And
the way I read it is that the sight of blood specifically was a trigger for him.
Hmm.
Because in a war type scenario, when you're shooting the enemy and walking away, like, you're seeing blood, but you're not often seeing it in that way, like coating someone's fingers as they're pleading with you. And I'm assuming that her vulnerability was able to kind of punch this tiny hole in his hallucination and put him in a different part of his own kind of PTSD.
Right.
Right? Because he's probably been that kid saying, Dad, please don't.
Oh, I didn't think about that part.
We know that in addition to locking him up, his dad beat him.
Right. Well, my thing... So the reason I got confused is because the dad says, do it. And then that almost, like, stops him because his dad said it. But then he was like, no, because my dad said it, I have to do it. It was like a weird, like, hate, respect thing.
It's also...
Like, I want my dad's respect, so I'm going to do it. But I fucking hate my dad, so I don't want to do it now. And it's almost like part of
Well, and keep in mind that within Greer's mind... his father is the first thing he's seen that is obviously not true.
Right.
Ray being shifty and bitchy, you know, Rush sneaking around, all of that is stuff that he believes is happening anyway. But his father is not on the ship.
He's seen his father before, though.
He has, but only alone on that planet.
Where he had the abandonment trigger.
Yeah.
It's like both he and Rush, again, just like in Air Part 1, where they really do come from similar backgrounds, and they do think very similarly about things, like cut through the bullshit. They just happen to go in different directions. Like, he and Rush are reliving hallucinations that they've had in their dreams, that they've relived before.
Yeah.
And that's a really interesting concept, to have that parallel between the two of them.
Yeah. And it's oddly, like, not really ever explored.
Yeah.
But, so the distraction of his other hallucination is enough that Rush can sneak up and beat him up. He's got a pipe of some kind.
This is my favorite thing about Rush in this scene, is that he even hits the people saving him. Like,
he's so
far gone that he's just like, I will hit everybody. And Matt is just like, what?
Yeah, like, so they get in, they're pinning Greer, and even after being knocked over by a freaking Semtex explosion.
Right.
Yeah, Rush is like, and now I'm going to wail on all the other Nakai because I don't know what's going on.
Right, he is completely unaware.
Yeah.
And then Matt ends the scene by saying, like, we got them, but there are wounded, which is a really terrifying thing to hear when there really aren't any aliens on board or enemies on board. Like, this is all from their deepest fears.
Yeah. We do go into our end montage.
Yeah.
There is a lot of James.
Yay, and James.
She's watching Chloe and Scott.
Looking sad. You know, Rush is working. Park is looking at him with a very sympathetic expression on her face. And Brody's looking at Park.
And I wonder if that's because they know that there wasn't a tick. They know that, like, his breakdown was something else.
Oh, that could be. Like, Brody doesn't want to look at Rush because he knows, and he doesn't want to acknowledge it because he doesn't think Rush would want to acknowledge it. And Park is looking at him because she's like, acknowledge it. Or she's trying to make sure that's what she thinks is right.
Or possibly Rush is, you know, just letting everybody believe that he was nuts because of the ticks.
Right.
And, you know, Park hangs out with TJ. TJ would have checked Rush and known that he didn't have one.
If that was the case, I wish they had put that in the show. But I don't think the writers thought that. I think the writers put a tick on him. But I think from what we've seen in the canon, it's clear that he didn't have one.
Yeah.
Volker, poor baby, stays awake as his reaction to all of this. Like, he's so terrified of falling asleep and waking up in that coffin again.
Yeah.
Remember, again, the scene I talked about that I love, Greer, like, standing really erect as she walks past a very guilty-looking Greer.
When he takes this half-step forward with this look on his face that, like, I've always read at the end of this episode is, like, he would apologize if Ray stopped to talk to him about it. But Ray's version is, like, I don't like you. You don't like me. Now we know how far you would go, and I'm not dealing with this. Like,
well, I mean, you can't blame her. I don't know if he would have apologized. I can't read him in this thing. It just looks like he knows.
Yeah, I mean,
that this went further than he even ever dreamed it could go.
Yeah, his expression is definitely much more, like you said, guilty and contrite than anything we've seen from earlier in the episode where he was insane.
This has been so let's think about Time, right? Where a series of events that weren't him necessarily happened and he felt guilt over it. And this is almost the same thing. Like, this wasn't him, right? Like, it might be a manifestation of a lot of the things that he thinks and feels, but you're defined by what you don't do, not by what you initially think. It's always your second reaction that is you as a person. Not your first. And I think he's struggling with that again. Like, you know, do I take, not credit, what do you call it?
Responsibility.
Yeah, do I take responsibility for something that wasn't me. Or was it me? I don't know. He can't tell anymore. So I think that's why he's so...
Yeah.
And then Ray just cuts it off. She doesn't even want to talk about it. And I don't think he wants to talk about it with her either. And I think, well, then next Eli looks at Chloe being sad and he does nothing about that.
Yeah, he just lets her be sad and look at space.
Yeah. And then they drop out of FTL, and this is, I think, my favorite part of the episode, where the gate is open, they have 10 hours on the clock, and this is such a defining moment. Like, if they said, like, we're not going to go through it this time, it defines the character of the show for another season. And yeah. I really thought they were going to be like, no, let's not go through every gate. But Young is like, no, we're going to send a team through. Like, why wouldn't we? Like, we're not going to let something like this scare us. And that is the heart of SGU.
What I have to wonder, that is the heart of SGU. And that's a beautiful sentiment, and we should just end it on that, and I shouldn't nitpick.
But
aren't they in the intergalactic void right now?
I think they just came out of the intergalactic void.
Oh, so the Tick episode was like, and now 3 months later, we went to our first planet and it put ticks on us?
I mean, I have to assume that because...
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I'm just... that's all I can think of.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But yeah. But, sorry, I'm going to go back to the heart of the SGU thing real quick. And I think it's important to establish it as the heart of SGU because it's not been clear for the last couple episodes because you have people not wanting to do things because of paranoia and, you know, fear of the unknown. I mean, all of Lost is, like, them making decisions based on what they know versus what they don't know. And in the end, it's just go on into the unknown every time.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I mean, the look on both Young and Rush's faces in that final scene is this, like, because this is what we do.
Right.
Right? Because we came here for a reason. Because, you know, this is what the Stargate program is about. This is what we as humans do. We walk through the door.
Rush's face? I thought he looked really resigned and not interested and tired.
No, he gets this, so he asks, shall we send a team?
Yeah.
And Young pauses and considers and then says, yeah, we have to. And there's this little smile on Rush's face of like, okay.
Really? Yeah. I don't remember that. I just remember like how tired and exhausted he sounds when the gate opens up and he's like, countdown, 10 hours. Another gate. He's bored. Like, not bored with it. He's uninterested in it, almost.
You're right. Behind the scenes knowledge for people listening. I watch the show on mute with subtitles while we're talking. And so I can't always hear the exhaustion in Bobby Carlyle's voice. He looks amused by Riley's comment about bug spray is what he looks amused by. I like this slight optimism from Young of like, every planet can't try to kill us. Our luck's gotta change.
But isn't it interesting, it's a reversal though, right? It's like, because Rush is usually like, well, we just have to go through, you know?
Yeah. Rush is like, usually the ship brought us here for a reason.
And now he's just like, no. I think he's just too tired from his whole experience.
Yeah, well, and he's been through a lot. The fact that he is there leads me to believe that he did not have a tick. Because everybody we see in that gate room is not somebody that just was dealing with a tick problem. Because those people presumably have, like, 24 hours of medical leave. But Rush is there, listening, watching the gate, doing what needs to be done.
Right.
But anyway, now that we've dragged that end out a bit much, final thoughts? I mean, your final thoughts were so beautiful.
Aw, thank you. Mostly my final thoughts are, and I didn't make any mention of this in the episode, but I think this episode is really well done, but I don't actually like watching it that much.
Yes.
So.
I agree with that. It's the cinematography and the acting are just A+, and the threat is entirely an internal human threat, which I like.
Right. I love the idea behind it. I love the execution. I still just don't want to watch it.
It's painful to watch.
It's because it's why it's called pain.
Yeah, I guess so.
What are your final thoughts?
Basically that. I mean, I will maintain my theory that that was Rush working through some chunk of his own issues. And I like that we got some depth and some information about characters we haven't been seeing much of.
Yeah. Mostly James.
Yeah, some James. We saw
Some
Dunning
Booker.
again. We saw Barnes again. Like,
Yeah.
they're broadening their cast a little bit.
Which is good because season two really benefits from having that cast broadened out.
Yeah.
Okay. So where can they find us,
Oh,
Maya?
we are at sgupodcast.tumblr.com. Talk to us there, read our various reblogs, and discuss all of this madness.
Discuss. Stargate is neither a star nor a gate. Discuss. Anyways, bye-bye.
Bye.